this is the first episode of Diary of an African Entrepreneur, and I spoke in one of the earlier videos that we'll be profiling and talking about and sharing the stories of several entrepreneurs across the African continent. And this is supposed to help you as a listener to understand and learn from the journeys of these entrepreneurs. Today, I'm going to be speaking to an interesting entrepreneur. Richie Zataya is the co-founder of Winich Farms, and he's going to be sharing his story with us in a way that you and I can learn. Richie, thank you very much for joining me on this video. There's so much I want to get into, and there's so much I want to hear, and I'm sure there's so much many people want to hear from you. But first of all, I want to get into your background.
I really do think that how parents raise their children matters a whole lot. And I say this because growing up, myself and my brother were not twins, right? But we were raised so much like we were twins. Growing up, we literally spent almost all the time together. That's how much facing this entrepreneurship journey together, that's how it has shaped us, because we've grown together, built things together. Even in my first business that I ever set up in the university, he was not there in flesh, but he provided the startup capital to get it done. And then in school, I had two businesses that I did set up. The very first one was a projector business, and Winner was the one who provided the startup capital. Thankfully, CJ came on board as well when I started the second business, which was Atai's Beans, you know, repackaging beans and all of that.
I want to get back to the story of Atai Beans, right? You started that business. It looks like it didn't turn out as well as you wanted it to. Can you share a bit more on that?
Backstory was, I lead off campus. So I went visited a coursemate of mine who stayed on campus. I got into the hostel, and they were trying to prepare like a communal meal for every of them in the room. And the meal that was to be prepared, you know, when they were trying to make suggestions, everyone just re-echoed the beans. Long story cut short was, I did a survey, you know, printed out papers, shared amongst the student communities to understand, okay, what's the food that was most consumed, and then the challenges they faced consuming it. And some of the results came out very interesting. You know, realized that indeed, just the sample that we took, beans was a meal that was most prevalent. And of course, it's because you can eat beans with rice, with yam, with bread, with gari, with several things. So it was like the go-to food for every other meal that you wanted to have. Some of the results we found when during the survey, that students complained about the most was three major things. The fact that you buy the beans, you have to start selecting it, you know, that process of selecting it before you cook it. Second was in terms of preserving it, preserving on the one side that weevils, you could equally see weevils come out of it very easily. And then third, still on the side of preserving, is that sometimes people buy it, they finish cooking and eating it, and then they have diarrhea. And that's because of some chemicals that the retailers, in a way to preserve it, impute inside the beans to try to, you know, prevents people from attacking the beans. So all of this was what we said, okay, you know, how can we solve for this? That we make it a ready-to-cook beans stored in an airtight bag that would prevent weevils from growing, and we would not have to use any harmful chemical to preserve it. And it's just a ready-to-cook beans, the way you buy rice and just put the rice inside the pot and you're cooking it. So that's how we came up with it. We recorded a number of success with it. At some point, we were able to secure one machinery that was going to help us with sealing the nylons, you know, after bagging it. Because originally, what we're using before was this like a Ziploc kind of bag, where it wasn't efficient, but we had to get a machine that was helping seal it. And it was in that process I equally met CJ when we were expanding to Benton Idausa University, Ekoma. So he saw what I was doing, you know, and one of those evenings where we just sit out and in the hostel having conversations, he was then proposing, how about we do it in a way that people in all these other universities can order and they don't need to wait for us to come and deliver. At least that will also help us reduce cost on placing it on shelves. So we created this web app. We got into these universities. Several students liked the product.
But it did come at a price. That semester, oh, my grades suffered. So I was going to ask, sir, I went from a 4.52 GPA to, I think the next semester was like a 2 point something. So it was a very, thankfully, it was not like a 400 level where the grade point average there was way weighted more than 200 or 300 level.
That's really been the journey and how I met CJ in Vidin at Ice Beans. And of course, we were able to sell some of the machineries that we were able to hire after. The business did not really scale like we wanted because of the several challenges that we faced. And we did not have the capacity at the time to grow it as much as we would have wanted. So what we just did was exit. And I call it exit because at the end of the day,
it's an exit.
It's an exit. Yeah, we sold some machineries, got some money. CJ and I shared the money. CJ, Wina and I shared the money. And everyone went their separate ways. But on my own end, I left university, went to start the shawarma business that I mentioned. One of those days where a customer came, paid for shawarma. He was giving change. And a few minutes later, he came back and said his balance was not given to him. And I was like, no, we gave you your balance. Unfortunately, there were no CCTV cameras to have shown that.
Yeah.
We then got into an argument, you know, things got really unpleasant. And I went home that day. And I thought to myself, Richie, is this the life you want to lead? Whether you will be fighting with someone over very little, you know. And then I thought about it. How much rich can I get with this, right? So that night, had all that thought. My parents were in the house. My brother, Wina, was back in Nigeria, you know, at the time. He was in the house. Nobody knew anything. I picked up my bags before morning. I went on the road. I was out of Uyo, out to the north. It was such a bold move that I made. And I look back and I'm like, how did I have that audacity? I did not know anybody from there. I didn't know how I was going to live, who was where I was going to live. I just had a few monies that I'd made from the business that we were running. And I just felt like, okay, I can go and go and start something. And it was on the back of, if we were successful with At Ice Beans, and we've identified some of the problems that we saw. And one of these problems was the access to the raw materials. We were not getting the raw materials from the farmers. We were getting it from the retailers, the wholesalers. How about we try to do the same thing, but this time around, got it from the farmers directly. You know, so I took the bold move. I did not go to the bus station to buy a ticket. In Nigeria, you call it along. I don't know if you know what it's
still the road.
And you just stay on the road. Oh, wow. And flag vehicles. And they were, all of them were not going to Kebbi State because I heard then Niger and Kebbi were the largest producer of beans at the time. So this one stopped me. This vehicle will stop me along somewhere close to the next state, and then I'll join the next vehicle that'll take me there. You know, and then when I arrived there, I slept at the bus park for 2 days.
Wow.
At the bus park. And for those 2 days, the only person I was in communication with was Wina. I did not tell him where I was. I just told him, I'm coming back, I'm fine. I tried to close off every deterring voice that would tell me, no, you're making the wrong decision. And that is not because I do not want to take advice from people, far from it. It's rather because I had a data that I had taken from years back that showed problems that I think we could solve for. At least let me get to where the problem is. And then we can then figure out whether we can solve for it or not, you know. So I then took that leap of faith, went there, stayed at the park, slept at the park for 2 nights until I was able to get a place. But then, thankfully, because I had not done my NYSC, I then applied for NYSC while I was there. They posted me to, I think it was Rivers. But I walked it's to the north. And the reason I did that was because I was told that as a copper, you get a lot of free perks. You know, you could get free land to cultivate. And for that 6 months while I was there, before I was able to enroll for the NYSC, I asked a lot of questions. You know, I engaged several people. And I remember one military person that I met. I told him my story and the interest that I had and why I was here. And then I asked him the size of the parade ground. that if one were to cultivate beans the size of that parade ground, how much would it normally cost? And then they said between 500 to 600,000 naira. I said, okay. Now, when you harvest, how many bags would you be able to get out of it? And he was like, oh, between 90 to 100 bags. Ha! Hey, I brought out my compunch calculator. Called me immediately. Hey, can you find out how much is a bag of beans in Akwa Ibom State or Lagos or wherever? Wina got back to me with, and I punched it. We're going to be making almost like a 4-5x return. And then I asked him, okay, so to rent this size of land, how much would it cost? And he said, 50,000. I said, for the size, he said, no, for the whole year. I said, ah, is that really? He said, yeah, that's the truth. And I mean, I found that really interesting. So I got into NYSC, all through the 3 weeks of camp. I was drawing out the business plan, you know, of how we're going to get it done. That capital that we already had, that Winner and I had saved from our businesses, that how we're going to put it into it. And it was a case of it had to work because there was nowhere for us to fall back to. That was the only capital that we had. There was nowhere for us to fall back to. So I was fortunate to be in a room in the camp, in the room where I was. It was like the big boys that were in that room. So they were people who were relatively boxed up. So I was in their midst. I was in the room with them. And when it was time to leave the room, leave the 3 weeks orientation camp, all of us had bonded, became friends. And this one was like, oh, I'm working my way out. I'm relocating to a different state. And they asked me, I was like, no, I'm staying back. I wanted to start a farm. And they found it ridiculous. But we all exchanged numbers. And I think that's also the power of social media. So we exchanged contact. They all left. I stayed back. I was able to secure a farm for free from... Not for 50,000. I got it for free. And I stayed back. And the living condition was not pleasant. I should mention that. The living condition was terrible. And I'm not saying it to deter any entrepreneur or anything. It's really the real story. It was so bad that the roof was leaking. Not only was it was leaking so bad. It's not the one that you can just put a bucket and it's probably dripping just in bits and before morning, you know, you wouldn't fill the bucket. No, it was the one that was running. So I would have to get several rags, and my mattress was on the floor. So I put the rags around the mattress so that even when it rains heavily and it fills the bucket and overflow, it will soak all the rags before it gets to the mattress. And then because the roof was, you know, leaking, sometimes bats flies into the room. So I had a mosquito net and I'm just there. Oh, okay. Seeing the bats. And my consolation then was one tennis song, which was Uyomeyo. You know, I get to sing, if you even sing that song, I get emotional. You know, because some of the lyrics of that song said, Ibiti Dadi Mi Ode, Adebe Matuko. So what that means is where my parents did not get, so I'll get there and even surprise. So that was a consolation for me throughout that period. You know, we embarked on the first project. As against the 90 bags or 90 to 100 bags that we were told we were going to guess, we got barely 2 bags. Howbeit, on social media, I documented the journey from, I still had some of the videos, you know, from where I joined them in planting, joined them in the whole process. Unfortunately, I didn't even know what was irrigation at the time. You know, again, I did not come from an agricultural background per se. You know, I didn't know how the whole planting process works. So coming there, I did not know how timely agriculture is, that if you don't plant when you're supposed to plant, one has begun to count their losses already, you know. And then to make things worse, climate change was also an issue because rain stopped when it wasn't supposed to. So there was drought for a long period of time during the cultivation. We had to start looking for how to get tanker trucks to come water the field. But how much water can you, you know, water the ground? Okay. So we were only, and it wasn't irrigation. We were only able to get 2 bags. But from the planting process up until, I was always posting on my social media. even when we harvested the two bags, I posted the harvest process. Now, there were some people from the camp, orientation camp that were in my room, that were seeing the whole process. And they saw that I harvested. And to my greatest surprise, shout out to Debola, that's his name. Debola was the one. He reached out. He said, Regis, you said you will stay back.
So you did.
And you did. And you saw the planting process from start to finish. And you've harvested. And he said, are you taking investments? Oh, wow. That's interesting. From using all the money that we had to do the first project, and we didn't know where we're going to get to again, what the next step was going to be for us. And I said, yes, we can do that. We're like, okay, if we gave you a millionaire, how much do we get in return? I said, okay, we can give you like 30-40% in return. We're like, okay, let's do it. Send me documents. No company was established at the time. So I just went online, drafted, got some sample contract document, put it together. I sent it to him. He read through it. He executed. I executed. And then he said, okay, send the account number. And I sent him my personal account number. He was like, hold up. How'd they expect me to pay to? I thought you had already set up a company. I said, yeah. There was no plan to set up a company at the time. I was like, yeah. We're working on it already. Like, okay, when you're done with it, send me the company account details. I called Rina. Okay, now is the time. Go help us, you know, get the CAC documents and help register it. We then told ourselves, we planted the first time. It did not work out. Let's go another route. Let's meet the farmers who have been doing the planting all their life. All right. Let's give them the money. Do it and plant. Don't go and get us the harvested pretty. Because now we're taking investment of a third party and we have committed ourselves to return the principal and the interest. And we did. I think we gave 5 farmers. We shared the money to 200,000 each for them. And they gave us the return. They gave us produce worth 1.6 million. So we gave Debola 1.4 million and we had 200K. And things took a different turn. Debola said, Richis, you did it. Just hold on. Next few days, he set up a meeting. He brought some celebrities because he was friends with them. And from 1 million that he gave us, we got 10 million from all of them. And we're so excited. Now the business has started. We did the same thing, replicated it, gave several farmers, got the returns as well, paid these guys. Everybody was happy. And it was like, reaches the interest is so much, like the interest that we're getting from different people. How would you guys handle it? We called CJ. Okay, help us. What do you think? We had a conversation and then CJ was like, oh, I know a couple of companies that are doing some crowdfunding. Let's just replicate the same thing. I can build a website, you know, and then we have people pick the amount of acres they want to finance or the amount of farmers they want to finance, and then we share the returns together. And that's how CJ came. I said, CJ, so here's the thing. If you want to do this, let's know whether you're dealing with us or you're just out there. And he was like, okay, I'm coming to do it with you guys. And CJ came, we built the first crowdfunding platform for Winage.
Yeah.
You know, then, and I think we got around, I think like 40 or 50 million from 10 million.
And were this all from people you knew?
Or? No. No, it was, Debola was the only person I knew at that time.
Okay.
He was the only person. All the other people, he was the one that just pulled from his network. And those people, they get their returns, they pull from their own network, and then it just kept going on and on.
It was really word of mouth.
Yeah, word of mouth. We had collected the monies, disbursed to farmers already. This was January, February, you know, as a matter of January, we had disbursed to farmers already. I think it was February. COVID, like it came as a tsunami, right? COVID was coming from this side. Regulation was coming from this side. It was around 2020 as well. SEC came up and said, everybody should stop crowdfunding. Everyone who has collected monies, they gave a deadline to refund the monies. And agriculture is not like that.
No, so
you have bought fertilizers. The farmers have already cultivated, put the crops in the field. And you gave a deadline of like 1 month to return all the money to people that you had gotten it from. How was that going to be possible, you know? Thankfully, I think that's also where communication also comes from, because some of our competitors at the time, maybe you probably know that, they were dragged on social media again and again and again. But The reason why you probably did not see Winich being dragged at the time, because we were having open house like every 2 weeks, carrying all the people who provided us the financing. The process, like, this is where we are now. Then COVID, then the lockdown started. Then the farmers on their own end were not equally able to go to the farms efficiently because of the lockdowns. So because of that, at the end of the cycle, the yield was even very bad. So the yield in itself was not even sufficient to pay back the principal. Not even talk of
the interest,
you know. But we communicated, we were very open, truthful with the retail investor that this is the position. We would only be able to give you 25% of the entire thing right now. The products that we have gotten, right now we can't even sell them, but the pressure was so much. Super, super much. So because there was lockdown, it was only health and the medical guys that were allowed to freely move around. I think it was sometime around May that they now approved for, either April, May, that they now approved for food. They now considered food as an essential and food could also move around. Now, we had, I think, like 4 trucks of onion that we had collected from the farmers, because that cycle it was onion we cultivated. We had collected from the farmers, and the best market was going to be Lagos, right? And then we're trying to ship it down to Lagos. But again, it was in the middle of COVID. So each state, we needed to get a clearance for each state. So to move from Kebbi to Lagos, you would pass through Niger, pass through Kwara, pass through Osun, pass through Oyo, before you get to Lagos. So we got the clearance from Kebbi. It moved from Kebbi, got to Niger. Now, we did not have the clearance for Niger. The trucks were on the road, covered. Because it was covered, onion is a perishable commodity. The heat was going to get it more damaged. I told Bina, we cannot be in Lagos. And we have a truck worth over, several millions of naira, that every day that goes by, we are counting our losses because the products, the heat will keep making the products get bad. And that was also around the time where lootings were happening in different places. Yeah, we can't be here. So I took a trip. And where, before I took that trip, I'm a Christian, and I think everyone should understand the place of intuition, right? Before that trip, I had all the intuition not to take the trip. But there was pressure from investors, the retail guys that. And I did not want it to get to the point where they were calling us out on social media. So I took the trip either way. I remember I told Ben I didn't want to take the trip. But when I was like, we are staying back. And I said, how would I stay back? People are dragging us. Do you want to get to the point where they call us on social media? Long story cut short, I took the trip and I went into an accident. That's why I was shot, because I wanted to show the scar. So you know how they say entrepreneurship is like jumping out of a plane and building a parachute before you land. I did not get to the product. The accident happened between the border of Osun State and Kwara State. That was where the accident happened. And I was rushed to the hospital. When I was rushed to the hospital, and the doctor I met, he said, do you believe in miracles? I said, yes. He said, because you need a miracle. He said, for your leg not to be amputated, you do need a miracle. So I couldn't go to where the produce was. They shipped me back to Lagos, straight to Igbobi Hospital. And I was there for several months. And then the doctors also confirmed that my legs were totally amputated. You know, how I'm walking today without having to limp or anything, it's a miracle, right? But I'm saying all of this to let entrepreneurs know that it doesn't have to be as not so nice as the journey like I have shared, right? But there will always be challenges, right? But as entrepreneurs, that resiliency needs to be at the core of what you need to believe what you're doing as long as the data shows this. You need to believe it to the point where people will think that something is wrong with you. Because if you don't believe it that much, two things. At every time when there's a challenge, you will just cower. That's one. Two, you will not be able to get team members that will believe it as much as you do as well. Because it's until you believe it so much that you'll be able to convince other people to leave what they are doing and come and join you to believe what you're doing as well. So you have to equally believe it to the point where they think that something is wrong with you. Because in all of this, the only people who knew that I had an accident were my family members. None of my team members knew. Because I did not want them to feel like, is this the end of the whole journey, right? I still had meetings with them on the sick bed. When I was moved on the stretcher, when I was moved to the wheelchair, I was still having meetings with them, you know, trying to ensure things were happening. It was my family members and CJ that was aware. Because at that moment, finally, the goods came to Lagos. A large portion of it had gone bad. The markets were not opened as often as it would have been. The retailers or the wholesalers were also unwilling to take on the risk of taking on the onion because it was a perishable. You know, all of this process then led us into the next phase of Winnetch, you know, because we had to have a meeting. How can we solve for this problem? We have people that we need to pay, you know, and that was where we then pivoted from a B2B that we were doing to a B2C in that period of COVID. We have to build an agro e-retail app that allows family homes stay at the comfort of their homes, order for produce, and we have it delivered to them. The original reason was because we wanted to sell off the onion. So we needed to get other produce that we would be able to put in a basket and put the onion as part of the basket to let it go. So on the one hand, we were building the e-retail solution. On the other hand, we had to figure out what other produce could we get as well. You know, then we introduced yam, introduced beans, you know, introduced finished rice, you know, and we built that and then we're shipping it all the way from the north. In all of this, each step of the way for us was very pivotal, instrumental to that point we got to, because all the farmers we had provided credits to in that first process, second process, third process, what process that we were, all of those farmers had grown to have trusted us. So at the point of COVID, where they were also struggling to sell their yams, their beans, you know, the same people who had been giving them credits came to them and said, you know what, give us this yam, beans. If you held on to it, it will either probably go bad. If you give it to us, we can help you sell. We might not be able to pay you right on the spot, but you can be sure you've worked with us for a while. We will help you sell and we will return the money to you. And they were able to trust us. They gave us the produce. We shipped it down to Lagos. We're delivering to people in their homes. Returned the monies back to the farmers. Customers were happy. We're able to recoup some money to be paying back in bits to those e-retail guys.
Okay.
And then the farmers were equally happy. And I tell people that in the agri space, one of the most important, it's an invisible barrier to entry, which is the trust factor, you know, and COVID and the whole SEC regulation helped us harness that trust factor in the agri space that we are. And because we're able to get the produce from the farmers, sell and return their monies to them, that just took Winnetch to a different level post-COVID. So that's really been the journey for us.
Now a lot of things are making sense to me when I'm thinking about the grind. When you came in today, the first thing you told me was that yesterday, one of your customers was unhappy. You got on the plane in the morning. So on the bus, we drove to Kwara.
You drove down to Kwara and drove back
from Lagos.
Yes.
So for those who don't know, that's how many hours drive? That's like a 6 hours drive.
A 6 hour drive to Kwara.
To and fro. You know, just because one customer was disgruntled and you decided to go there. Now it's making sense to me. You just didn't build that habit today. You've been in the grind. You've been on the ground. You've been in the field.
I agree. And the members know that. They know that if you don't get the job done, we will come and get it done. They know that. So people don't know. As of today, Monday, Wednesdays, Fridays, we have a check-in meeting. It can be a 5 minutes, 10 minutes meeting. But that check-in meeting that we get to have, it's everybody from sales to operations, every state lead, everyone is sharing what they were able to get done. I onboarded XYZ amount of farmers, I onboarded XYZ amount of agents, such that if one agent says, I onboarded 5 new agents today, and we're successfully able to onboard 10 farmers, and another was not able to do that on that Monday, he will not come to the check-in on a Wednesday, and he's not saying he has done something as well. And we are seeing the data.
Very recently, we made sure the engineering guys were going to the field as well. We let them get to appreciate what the work of each other is, you know, because at the end of the day, it's the teamwork that will get us to, you know, help us solve the problem in the most efficient way that we're trying to solve.
Today, Winich is putting smiles on the faces of informal processors in Nigeria.
And farmers.
Because anyway, if you can't put a smile on the face of the processors if farmers are not smiling.
Exactly.
So you're putting a smile on their faces by connecting them. Can you talk a bit about what you're doing and you know, what is the value that you're creating across the entire value chain?
You know, before Winich came into the space,
one thing that we have done is we have been very, very customer-centric. And we don't say it just by saying it. We'll say it because if you come to the office, you see we have this very big poster that says a happy customer, happy company. Not happy company, happy customer. It's happy customer, happy company. We take feedback of both farmers and off-takers very personally. We don't build what we think they like. We engage them and build what they like, what they want. And if they make any changes, we change with them, you know. Before Winich came into the space, most farmers, and I say it, if anybody wants to contest it, they should come and contest it. Most farmers, at least the ones that we have worked with, were absolutely unbanked. And I say it because, I mean, how can you bank someone who did not have a BVN? We issued their BVNs to them for the very first time. So if we issue the names, we're the ones that
banked. How many farmers are we talking about?
Over 200,000.
200,000.
Over 200,000 as of today. How we've been able to ensure that we are putting smiles on the farmers' faces and putting smiles on the faces of informal processors and retailers is by engaging them. We are engaging them every day. You barely see Winner in Lagos. The reason is because I get to ask him, what are you doing in Lagos? You're the head of operations. You know, CJ can be in Lagos. You know, some other persons can be in Lagos, but you are the head of operations. The only reason we've been able to do what we have done, achieve what we've achieved, is by engaging them. Right now, an informal processor or retailer can stay at the comfort of their factories, download the Winich app, and then they can, without having to go from one market to another or one community to another to source for their raw materials, they can stay at the comfort of their factories, order their produce and track the truck as it moves, just like you would order from any of this food or ride-hailing platform, and you can track how close the driver is to you. They can track as the driver delivers their produce. They can
from anywhere in Nigeria,
anywhere right now, regardless of where the off-taker is. You order your produce and we will deliver it to you right now in about 48 hours, depending on the location that they are. And this is something that before Winich, at least I know several companies are servicing, are helping farmers offtake their produce, servicing to the large guys. But I haven't really seen someone doing it for the informal guys. You know, some people do it for hotels. I would consider hotels as relatively formal, you know, but the informal guys, the ones that probably are not registered with the CAC, you know, are
small volumes,
yeah. You know, 1 ton. 10 tons, 20 tons, 30 tons, you stay at the comfort of your factories or stores and we can have that raw material delivered to you when you want them, how you want them, and at a very, very competitive price because you're purchasing it directly from the farmers as against from the processors and retailers.
Well, this is brilliant. I mean, if we had enough time, I would have wanted to go into all the other brilliant things that you're doing, but I'm sure people can always even log in, check on Winich Farms website. Everything is there. I think the biggest thing I hear from you right now is that you're really solving that gap between farmers and informal processors, making sure you can bridge the gap, make the products available to them on time.
Yeah. So in summary, it's like the commerce infrastructure. Yeah. I say commerce infrastructure, not because I'm trying to use the buzzword, no, but rather because from the aggregation process to the payments, you know, again, when you're doing volumes, if your payments infrastructure is broken, the volumes will get broken after all, because if you're not able to pay, if the off-takers are not able to pay efficiently for the produce they're ordering, or the farmers are not able to get the monies that's, you know, of the produce that they cultivated, at the end of the day, you will not be able to do it in a very good volume. So we're building the commerce infrastructure, and there's still a number of moving pieces and new product lines that we'll still introduce, you know, like the buy now, pay later for the off-takers, credits for farmers and the like. Well, all of that is still in the pipeline. So yeah, it's the commerce infrastructure.
How do you focus on your own personal development?
For personal development, right now, I have a number of mentors.
Okay.
Who I am super grateful to. One of them has been with us from the very start, and I'm super, super grateful to him. His name is Ambrose, Mr. Ambrose. Thank you so much. Also have a few other mentors who I could, they always challenge me in person to be more, to do more. And this is not something I take very lightly. So that's one way. Another way is I am very big on learning, you know. So I don't see myself as an island. So I'm engaging with other entrepreneurs who right now we just set up our board. And on the board, we haven't filled the independent spots just yet. And the reason for that is because the direction of who I'm thinking to be, to fill that independent role, is an entrepreneur as well who has probably built a business similar to ours, but has gone way ahead. And because I know for me, that would be a huge learning point to, you know, further develop myself. That would, because I can only give to the extent to which I have, right? So I think in this direction, that's the way I continually develop myself.
Thank you very much, everyone, for joining this video podcast. So please do subscribe to the channel so that you can continue to get videos like this into your feeds. Hear the stories of African entrepreneurs, how they are growing their businesses, the challenges they are facing, the successes, and how they can continue to expand, and how you can learn from those experiences. Thank you very much.